John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
What's going on in football, and following very closely is Joe Fan from NBC Sports Northwest. And so I guess the big thing to start it off is, what was your reaction as you now look back a week ago for the Jamal Adams trade?
I thought it was a great trade. You know, I think I'm honestly surprised as against it so many people have seemed to have been. You know, I think the reality is the Seahawks haven't done a good enough job of finding game-changing talent in the draft. And so this is them taking their medicine a bit and saying, hey, we're not contenders the way our roster is right now. We need more of that blue chip talent. So now going and getting it, I think it does make them much more bona fide contenders going into the season. So, you know, I think that's just the way I look at it. I think everyone's a little bit jaded in terms of the Houston Texans giving away, it seems like their best players for free. But the reality is that, you know, good players are expensive. And Jamal Adams is arguably a top 15 defensive player in the NFL, and he's so much more than just a box safety. And so, yeah, I really do think, you know, it was a fantastic deal for the Seahawks and should be a transformative player for their defense.
Well, and that's the thing, because I track this all the time, probably ad nauseum and all that stuff. But when you think about it, it's like, if you're going to be a playoff team drafting 21 to 32, your chances are you're not going to get a Pro Bowl player. It's simple as that. I mean, since 2015, there's only been five or six players drafted 21 to 32 went to the Pro Bowl. And, of course, then John Snyder, you know, whether he stays in the first round, moves down in the first round, well, you didn't get a Pro Bowl player in the first round since 2011, or 2010. Well, welcome to the National Football League. Very few are able to do that. It started changing back in 2015. And so now to think about this, it's like if there's only six that have been taken, you know, so now five or six taken, that means 26 or 27 teams are in the same boat as Seattle, not getting a Pro Bowl player from the first round.
Yeah, we're in the same boat here. I'm completely in agreement with you. You know, I think the reality is one of those things like, would you rather have Jamal Adams on your roster or not? And the answer is an unequivocal yes, given what you have around him and Russell Wilson being in his prime and all of that. And obviously, yes, it's an expensive way to build your roster. You're going to have to pay him. The biggest downside of the trade is that now he holds all the cards in terms of the renegotiation. But you know what? He knew that going, you know, the Seahawks knew that going in. They, you know, that was the decision they made. And it's not like they're like, oh, shoot, now all of a sudden we don't have leverage in these deals, right? They know exactly how this is going to go. They understand what's coming down the road. And they're willing to make the trade anyway. So, you know, I applaud their aggressiveness, and it's something that they haven't really been willing to do to that degree. And I think it's a nice, you know, indication that they're moving some chips under the middle of the table going into this year.
Yeah, and again, it's if they would have traded up, it'd be roughly the same price if they traded up from the low 20s or so to be able to get a Jamal Adams. So they basically just paid the cost and, you know, throwing in, you know, Bradley McDougal in that deal too. But no, I think, I mean, sure, it seems like it's expensive, but you're not going to find a player like that. And I just looked to Pittsburgh, you know, when they traded up for Minka Fitzpatrick, they gave up a first round pick, but that was going from 20 to 10, or just giving up a first round pick. And as soon as he got to that team, they became a top five defense.
Yeah, and I think the difference, people would point to that, it was only one first round pick. Well, that trade has happened right after Ben Roethlisberger got hurt, and there was a very strong possibility that that was going to be a top 10 pick. Now, obviously, the defense there was so good, it kept that ship afloat and made it into the, you know, middle of the first round. But that was a huge risk by Pittsburgh, because that could have ended up being, and I think Miami was probably banking on that being, a top 10 pick. And, you know, the one counterpoint that people will make is the benefit of getting the rookie as a sixth overall pick is the you know, years of, you know, value on the roster. The Seahawks don't get that outside of 2020, but what the Seahawks do get is a guaranteed sure thing, right? And this guy's done nothing but impress. He's already an all-pro 3 years in the league. So, again, we could go on and on about this, but, yeah, you and I are on the same page here. Fantastic deal for the Seahawks, and really, really should be, you know, a huge boost to the defense.
No doubt. So then the other thing that happened this past week is that, you know, Antonio Brown got the eight-game suspension. It could go longer because they still have not resolved the lawsuit that his former woman trainers made against him for, you know, sexual-type advancements or whatever you want to call it. And so where do you think the Seahawks stand and others as far as, you know, you sign Antonio Brown, or do you wait to find out even more?
I just don't understand the benefit of signing him. I mean, obviously, he's a great player, but this is a guy who's quit on two of his last three employers, and that's on the field, right? And you look at all the off-the-field troubles that's already earned him an eight-game suspension. There's an outstanding case that you mentioned, the civil suit in Florida, that who knows how that's going to turn out, could end up being an additional suspension. I just don't see why it makes sense. The Seahawks are not wide receiver starved nearly enough to go down that road. Antonio Brown is one of the best wide receivers of all time. I don't think that's being an exaggeration there. He's that transcendent of a talent. But, you know, he's going to be wanting, and no matter what he says about being a team player and just wants to win, just wants an opportunity, this is a guy who's going to want Antonio Brown-type target shares. And he's not going to get that with Will Dissly and Greg Olsen and Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf on the roster. So I just don't think there's enough to go around to make him happy if you ever even get to the point where you get him on the field. So to me, it's not worth the PR hit, not worth the potential locker room distraction. You know, you wait for Josh Gordon to get reinstated and go that route instead. And it just makes so much more sense.
Yeah, no doubt. Then today, Ian Rappaport reporting that Brandon Jackson, who was cut on a $2.133 million salary, has just re-signed with the team. My guess is for 1 year, $825,000. That puts the roster at 79. And my guess would be the next move is going to be, you know, Joey Hunt, who, you know, had a 2.133 because of the escalator for his playtime. I bet you he comes back and signs too, because they're at 79 right now. And figuring, gee, they left two roster spaces out there. I think that could be filled by Joey Hunt.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, it's very likely. There's no point in not filling your roster spots. And, you know, I don't think those guys were ever going to make that much money this year. But obviously, they still like the players. And even if they end up just being, you know, camp bodies and thrown into the competition, there's no sense in not bringing them back. It's a zero-risk move. So I totally understand that.
Yeah, so I think that can be good. Now, where do you stand right now in the latest, which is kind of like anything new latest, on Jadeveon Clowney?
I don't know. You know, until I hear from his mouth that Seattle has been ruled out, I'm going to maintain that it's the most logical spot for him to go. And I think if you look at the overall improvements to the defensive line, you look at the improvements of the secondary, all across the board, I really think that he's going to have a great opportunity to have a big year in Seattle, should he decide that's where he wants to come back. And so with the familiarity with the system, familiarity with the locker room, you know, unless the money is just so much bigger elsewhere, I really do think Seattle continues to be his best option.
Yeah, I would agree. Because, again, it's really, as much as people want to try to throw new teams on there, and as part of what he'd like to do is, you know, push for more teams to jump in, nobody new is jumping in. You know, somebody thought New England would be willing to do something. Don't see it. You know, Bill Belichick doesn't like to pay defensive ends. You know, he got rid of Chandler Jones. He didn't pay Trey Flowers. And there's a number that is wanted by him, Clowney, that they're not going to pay. So it's like, scratch that. They brought up the Jets. Bradley McDougal was trying to recruit him. And the Jets, who basically took one phone call on Clowney at the beginning of free agency and nothing else, they're not going to do anything. So it's Tennessee. And, of course, they're still waiting for Vic Beasley to report. And that could open up more money for Clowney. But I kind of agree with you. If Beasley does show up and he says he's going to show up, then I think it's still going to be a chance for Seattle to get him.
Yeah, to me, it's the opt-outs that are the wild card here. And obviously with the Jets, with Mosley opting out, there's some more money there. So who knows? But again, I agree with you. I don't see anyone, even with the opt-outs, deciding, you know, hey, we're going to come meet your number at this point. So for me, I'm with you. I think it, who knows? You know, also, you know, Jadeveon Clowney's going to have to swallow some pride here to a degree, because, you know, the money that he had on the table at the beginning of free agency might not be there anymore. So, is he willing to, you know, pull a Le'Veon Bell and say, I'm willing to sit this year out because it makes more sense to save my body than to not get the number I want? Or did you say, hey, you know, kind of check your ego a bit and say, I gambled a bit, it didn't work out, but I'm going to come in and cash in with the Seahawks and hopefully make that money back next offseason?
Yeah, no question. So how, with the addition of Jamal Adams, how close do you think it is right now between Seattle and San Francisco?
I think it's really close. I mean, you look at the games last year, and that's about as close as you can get for a two-game stretch, right, with the division coming down to a literal inch. And so you had, you know, a blue-chip player on your defense, I think, is huge. And Russell Wilson, again, will always be the greatest equalizer. I think last year the rosters were pretty far apart, but yet the games were still so close, and they actually, you know, obviously ended up splitting them. So, you know, I am on board with this being You know, the NFL's great rivalry once again, and I think, you know, San Francisco still has the edge a little bit, but I wouldn't say it's by much, just slightly.
Yeah, no doubt. So what do you have coming up on podcasts and everything on the air?
Yeah, podcasts coming out this week. Just continue to do training camp preview stuff and season preview and what we kind of think this might look like. And, you know, right now it's just kind of all gearing up. Pete Carroll speaks at one today, so it'll be really interesting to see what he has to say about the Adams trade, the roster, and everything else.
Okay, that all sounds good. And, of course, that's Joe Fan from NBC Sports Northwest. Thank you for joining us, and have a good week.
Hey, you as well. Thanks so much.
All righty, great. And so you can listen to the show via the 710 Sports app. It's powered by the Dubin Law Group. Coming up next, we get out the report card. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
It's time for the report card with the professor.
In the report card we get out every day, we look at the good, the bad, the ugly, the smart, the stupid, what people say, what people do. We take the stories, we take the anecdotes, we take the social media comments, and we also take the voices, and we attach a grade to it. Curtis Rogers coming out each day, and he does the report card. One piece of note right now, state of Ohio just came back moments ago and said that you know, they're not allowing any football games to have fans, but there's also a report out there that they may change that for the Bengals and the Browns before the start of the football season. So kind of a mixed word on that. But at least for now, they're saying no fans in the stands.
Yeah, very interesting situation. Then obviously you got Ohio State Buckeyes football too in that state, which they fill out about 100,000 a game at the Horseshoe. So another big opportunity there for fans to show up. Doesn't look like that's going to happen quite so soon in the state of Ohio, but definitely something to watch out for. John, on the report card, we have seen athletes across multiple sports opt out because of their concerns with COVID and all that. Well, over the weekend, we had one of our most interesting opt-outs yet, and that would be in Major League Baseball. Mets outfielder Yoenis Cespedes, he didn't show up to New York's game on Saturday against the Braves, just didn't let his team know where his whereabouts are, and there was basically a search party for him by the team, and they were wondering where he was. And then come to find out later in the day that Cespedes said, you know what, I'm out, I don't need to show up for this season, I'm going to take my money and go home. So, John, how are we grading Yoenis Cespedes not letting his team know where his whereabouts are before deciding to opt out of the 2020 season?
About as strong of an F as you can have, because, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, opting out was a bad decision, but the way he handled it was absolutely horrible. I mean, by not telling his teammates, by not telling the team, I mean, he basically walked out. It's no different that, but remember a couple of years ago when a cornerback for the Buffalo Bills, you know, just walked out on his team like that at halftime. Well, you quit on your team, you don't give the team the opportunity to replace you, all those different things. I mean, that's just is horrible. I mean, if, you know, obviously, if I'm the team, I'm never bringing him back. And if you're the league, you got to be very suspect of even wanting to sign him, because he quit. Again, if it's a matter of a proper opt-out, no problem. If you don't feel comfortable with the virus or anything else, you have the ability to opt out, but not like that.
Yeah, I'm giving Cespedes an F for not allowing the Mets just a heads up about what he wanted to do. That's all he had to do to avoid this crazy situation. There were people worried about his well-being. You know, is he okay? Is something in trouble with him? No, he went home. And it's like, dude, you could have saved us a lot of time and worry if he had just simply let us know. But I will say, John, it's very fitting that this kind of stuff always seems to happen with the New York Mets. All franchises, they have some of the weirdest stories just of players and coaches and just the weird things that happen to them. It feels like about once every few months something strange goes on in that organization. John, also on the report card today, we get the news this morning that The Rock has purchased the XFL for $15 million. The Rock has plenty of background in football. He played at the University of Miami. I believe he played in the Canadian Football League, too. John, how are we grading the XFL's potential with The Rock now in charge?
I'll give it a B because, again, you know he's going to be very good at promoting it. Now it's a matter of figuring out how well to run it, and I think it has a chance. And so, you know, he's going to be the big name pushing it. He's a great salesperson. He's a great actor, all those different things. So I'm going to give it a B because I think, you know, at least you know it's somebody that – is going to be trying to get a good product out there.
Yeah, I'll give it a B as well. I think he is somebody that has rarely had anything tank that he has put his fingerprints on. He's somebody that lends a lot of credence in terms of name value. He's somebody that has plenty of crossover appeal, too, because of his time in Hollywood and also his time with the WWE and his time in football. He's very multifaceted. So I think having somebody like The Rock involved with the XFL, I think, is going to be good for the league. I mean, just to keep it going over the course of an entire season, hopefully it's able to keep it going. Because over the 5 weeks that we saw, John, I really enjoyed what I saw out of the field.
Mm-hmm. I did, too. I thought it was very good. So, no, I think this was an excellent move.
Yeah. Also on the report card, John, we just talked to Adam Rittenberg of ESPN about this about an hour ago, but a group of Pac-12 players have created a list of demands that they want from the conference to ensure their safety and well-being during the 2020 season. Some of those plans include better medical coverage, but also some of those demands include a 50-50 revenue split, which to be able to hammer that out over in about a month span when no agreement was ever in place between the two sides seems like the tallest of tasks to get done, and I don't see the feasibility of that happening anytime soon. So, John, how are we grading the group of Pac-12 players saying that they want to be taken care of?
F. I mean, because they're totally ridiculous and unreasonable in saying, oh, yeah, well, we want 50% of the revenue. Are you kidding? I mean, first off, you're going to take the money away from the college? That's terrible. Now, again, this is long overdue that players would get their digital rights and get money from that. That's overdue. But now here's a time where you don't even know if the college is going to be able to have kids on campus and students on campus. And then to ask that kind of a demand and asking for like insurance after 6 years, it's like, come on, you got to be ridiculous. You're a bunch of players that are being misled by somebody. I'm going to give it an absolute F.
I'm going to give them a B for the idea, a D plus for the execution, because, I mean, obviously we want to get these players taken care of. That's a good thing. The medical coverage, yes, they should absolutely get that, especially if they're going to be playing during a pandemic. But to then ask on top of that the 50-50 revenue split, it seems like they're casting their net a little too far here. I do think it's well past time that college athletes make money off of their own likeness. But to do it this close to the season without allowing for any sort of period for negotiation, the chances of it actually happening are slim to none in terms of the revenue split. I don't even think there would be chances of it happening within the next year or two, even with this intent and likeness thing that's most states are adopting here soon. But I just think the timing of it could not have been worse. But I do give them a B for the idea behind it. It's just that they could have gone about the execution a little bit
better.
You
know what I think about their opt-out?
What's that?
Don't let the door. You can figure out the rest of the words.
Hit you where the good Lord splits you.
That's it. Yeah.
And then finally, John, on the report card, Michael Bennett was on Chris Long's podcast. Chris Long, former member of the New England Patriots, who was on that side of Super Bowl 49, the winning side. Michael Bennett, as we all know, on the losing side of Super Bowl 49. But before the final whistle blew in that game, Michael Bennett made sure to get some shots in at Rob Gronkowski and the rest of the Patriots' offense after Russell Wilson and the offense turned the ball over late in the game. Well, Bennett was asked about that tussle on Chris Long's podcast. Here is what Bennett's response was.
Whose fault was the brawl at the end of the Super Bowl?
It was all of our fault. I think everybody was just mad, you know. Like, it's not my fault. I don't know. I just always wanted to punch Gronk in the face. I think he's a great guy, actually. But then anytime I had the chance to punch Gronk.
Michael Bennett saying he just wanted to punch Gronk in the face. That's all it was. Yeah. How are we grading Michael Bennett's rationale for his Super Bowl tussle?
I'll give it a B. I mean, again, it's like just mad and all that stuff. So he takes it out on my high school guy where he went to my high school and Gronk and all that stuff. I'm glad that he said something positive about him at the end. It's like, okay, you can understand. It's like Gronk's one of the faces of the franchise. And so you just hit him in the face.
I'll give Michael Bennett a B for that explanation, I can understand why he'd be so frustrated after that because, I mean, the Seahawks had the game won.
Right.
They blew it, so he's got to take his anger out somewhere. That is it for today's report.
Hey, be sure to check out the professor's notes on 710sports.com. The professor's notes are brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at Fife. Coming up next, we're going to go on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line at 710-710 to take your text questions. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
And, of course, it's time now to go on the Busy Heart Seltzer text line and take your text questions. Text us at 710-710. So, what do we have?
From the 206, John, they say, if the NFC West is the best division in football, which division is second?
I'd say the AFC South, because you know Indy now has Phillip Rivers and a good draft and DeForest Buckner. I mean, Houston's been a playoff team and Tennessee's been a playoff team the last couple of years. You know, Jacksonville is going to be a dog, but you know, that's okay. And then the next one I think would be the NFC South, because then you've got New Orleans, maybe the most talented team in the NFC, Tampa Bay with Tom Brady, Atlanta with Matt Ryan, and you know, Carolina is going to be in the dumpster, but you know, I think that's kind of where the top divisions are, in my opinion.
From the 206, they want to know, John, did you get a Screen Actors Guild card for your movie role?
I did. In fact, I'm still getting residuals.
Nicely done. Yeah, because I believe it's available on Disney Plus, so you get those streaming residuals.
That's it. Yeah, so again, I get the, you know, so each year I get a nice small check. Maybe it's like $48, $49. They take taxes out and everything else. And, you know, if I want to, I can actually get into the retirement pension plan for the Screen Actors Guild.
There you go. $48, $49. You can take Pat out for dinner with
exactly,
that.
Exactly, yeah.
The 206 wants to know, with the Quentin Dunbar situation, why have the Seahawks not gone after another cornerback and they named Logan Ryan as a possibility?
Good question. I think that they're taking it one step at a time. I mean, we don't know if they've reached out to him or not. I mean, he doesn't have great speed, and so that could be a problem. And I have to kind of look at his size dimensions, because, again, if he doesn't have that, you know, that reach that they like to have, then that may not work out. But, you know, again, it's like, you know, if you bring in Ryan, then you have to see, okay, who are you going to release? Because, again, it's kind of a one-for-one type of deal. And, again, there's no hurry at this stage. It's not like they're going to, you know, go on the practice field before August 17th. Sure, you can start training right now and running and lifting and all those different things.
425 wants to know, what's the status on Josh Gordon's reinstatement?
Still waiting. Don't know. I mean, you would think they're going to start coming down with some of these decisions. You know, they came down in part with the Antonio Brown decision, but I know the one problem that was in the mix is it was hard, you know, with the in the last month for him to get tested, because again, there weren't many testers available because everybody was tied up working in the, you know, with the pandemic and everything else. So that might be one of the holdouts, but you know, he and Randy Gregory, they're kind of waiting, and we'll see how long it takes.
206 wants to know, John, between Javon Kinlaw and Brandon Ayuk, which 49ers rookie will have a bigger impact in 2020?
I have to think it's going to be, even though, you know, I still wonder how a rookie wide receiver is going to do, particularly trying to pick things up and with no offseason program. Probably Kinlaw, but again, going from DeForest Buckner to Kinlaw, I don't care. It's a drop. Because, you know, Buckner is one of the top five in football, and in his first year, Kinlaw can't be in the top five.
From the 425, they want to know, JC, have you ever been to a team's training camp and knew right away this team is a dumpster fire?
Oh, heck, oh, absolutely. I mean, you can just see it. I mean, I still remember going to see the Cleveland Browns, and you can see, well, this team's terrible. In fact, that was at the time that Josh Gordon was actually there, and it just looked out. And in fact, I still remember... this was, I think, the year that they won one game. Is that I looked and I go to some of the beat guys, because that was the year they drafted 14 guys. And I'm looking there and I'm saying, I go over to one of the beat person. I say, hey, so am I looking at this wrong? I only see three players of the 14 draft choices that look like they even have a chance to play in this league. You know, that was the year that they drafted Corey Coleman in the first round. You know, he came from Baylor, and that Baylor offense didn't have a playbook, and so he was lost. I mean, I looked at the other wide receivers, didn't see anything there, saw a couple things from the linebackers, but that was it. It was awful.
Did you ever get that sense early in like the early 90s watching the Seahawks? Because they had some clunker teams in, well, that
I mean,
time.
I covered the 92 team. I mean, Dave Wyman was on it. Cortez Kennedy ended up getting, you know, defensive MVP, but their offense was so bad. They only scored like 143 points. No, it's like, you know, and every beat guy that was a friend of mine would come over at the game. He says, I feel sorry for you having to watch this. And I agreed.
From, let's go with the 425. They want to know, how much do you think George Kittle will get in his next contract?
I mean, unless he's going to play this all wrong, I think it's going to probably end up being, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of like about 13 a year. And because, again, you know, it's hard right now with $175 million cap next year to get the value. And of course, you know, if you get a deal now, you're going to be putting more than $10 million on your cap, and you got 17 teams right now that are over the cap for next year. And, you know, if they even have a $10 million cap hit on Kittle next year, now the 49ers are going to be over. And so you can see there's a lot of problems with this right now.
From the 509, they want to know, John, how concerning is Doug Peterson's positive COVID test?
I mean, I think he's going to be okay. You would presume he's going to be okay just from the standpoint that he got a positive test and, you know, he's not hospitalized. I mean, he's got the positive test and he, you know, held a Zoom press conference today. So that's got to be encouraging. Again, we'll see how it goes in, you know, the next couple of weeks. But you would think that he's going to be back and serving in about 10 days.
This one from, let's see here, from the 206, they want to know, who is the, or what was the craziest interview you have ever done in your entire career?
There's been a lot of fun ones. I mean, it was always fun with Lester Hayes because Lester had that speech impediment. And, you know, he'd say, you know, talk about Steve Largent, he says, well, say it like I say, 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 Steve Largent, like I say, like I say, like I say, Gumby ankles, Gumby ankles. It's like, and he was always fun like that. Certainly, you know, any Terry Bradshaw interview was always hysterical because, you know, he would, you know, he would always come up with the most creative stuff that you can have, and it was always fun to be with that. And so, you know, there's been so many good ones that I've been fortunate to, but I always like the Lester Hayes ones.
From the, let's see here, from the 425, they want to know, what do you make of David Njoku retracting his trade request?
Well, probably being smart because they weren't going to trade him. And so if that's going to be the case and, you know, you're on pretty much one more year, they did put the fifth year option on him. Then you just got to kind of settle in because if they're not going to trade you, you have the choice. You can hold out and lose a year toward free agency and, you know, be in the same boat you are on the team next year. But I think he understands that next year he's gone.
The 360 wants to know, John, do you think Steven Gostkowski ever kicks again?
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to remember the team. I think was it
the Titans?
Titans, I think, were looking at him, and I think, I don't know if Chicago wasn't, but you know, there was a couple teams still looking at him, and so I would have to anticipate that he still has a chance.
John, from the 425, they want to know, after cashing in last year in free agency, how would you grade C.J. Mosley after just two games in a Jets uniform and now he opts out of the 2020 season?
D-minus. I mean, you know, one thing that he hurt Seattle on as far as the team, not the player, but, you know, he took the salary up to $17 million when it should have been about 15 or 16, and that helped Widener get more money. Good for Bobby. But in this case, to play two games, and then, you know, did you realize, you know, you realize how much he's going to make this year?
It's, well,
150,000,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
$10 million. In they gave him a $10 million roster bonus in March. And so, you know, to have that kind of money tied up in him, and then to make matters even better for him and worse for the Jets, you know, he was one of three players in free agency in 2019 that got 3 years of guarantees. And so he has guarantees in his contract for next year and the year after that.
From the 425, they want to know, what are your expectations for Teddy Bridgewater in 2020?
I think it should be pretty good. I mean, they're not going to have a lot of wins because their defense is going to be pretty bad, but they got a lot of speed at the wide receiver position. You know, they've got Christian McCaffrey. So I think he's going to put up pretty good numbers, and I think Matt Rhule is going to run a pretty good offense because there's some positive things to look at there.
And they brought in Joe Brady, the LSU passing coordinator, so that'll be something to watch for in Carolina. And then finally, John, from the 206, When you look at Seattle's roster, besides a pass-rushing defensive end, what is their biggest need at this point?
I think they're pretty well set. I mean, again, defensive tackle is a definite need. You know, they still could add a defensive end. You know, Josh Gordon, I mean, you have to, you know, think about the position at the, you know, what's going on at the cornerback position if they don't have Quentin Dunbar, just for depth. But I don't think they have too many pressing needs. Again, they just got to make sure that the pass rush is better.
That'll do it for text questions.
Okay, coming up next, our Daily Dose of the Groz with Dave Grosby. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle. And our Daily Dose of the Groz with Dave Grosby on a very monumental day. Monumental is that the fact is, Dave Grosby, congratulations. Happy birthday, number 60.
Thank you, John, very much. I didn't had some doubts as to whether I'd get here, but I've now entered the seventh decade.
I know, very good. And, of course, so what things do you have planned for the 60th?
Well, John, sign of the times. It'll be a birthday filled with wearing a mask, social distancing, taking a careful walk, and trying to survive to 61.
Mm-hmm. Which is, I think, a very good thing to try to do it. You know, it's been very eventful, and of course, I mean, the thing is that, you know, we're always trying to make sure that your health is going well, because we want that to happen and have the good health, and so that has to be encouraging. So, but you're feeling pretty good.
John, yeah, you know, it's good days and bad days, and today is a good day, and you just plow forward a little bit, and, you know, being an at-risk person, I gotta do my share, and my share is to stay out of the way, and to shelter, and to not get sick. So, it's a birthday focused on other people. Mm-hmm. How about if I put it that way?
Well, that's good. That's good. So, yeah, and no plans to go out or anything, or?
You know, we not really, just regular stuff. I mean, the pandemic doesn't rest for your birthday. There's no point in dropping my guard in my particular case, being at risk in a whole bunch of ways. So keeping it low key is going to work just fine for me.
Okay, that sounds good. Now, lots of stuff going on. Mariners, you know, lost so far 2 out of 3 to the Oakland A's, but their starting pitching was good. Defense was improved. You know, they got some hitting from Kyle Lewis. You know, bullpen, of course, we won't talk about that. That's not going too well, right. But very competitive series and a very competitive, you know, I guess, last 6 games in the division.
Yeah, I mean, you can... You know, you can see the pieces moving forward. You know, it's clear it's a young team, the youngest team in baseball. That's a positive. It's about playing well. I mean, I think you talked about the defense and the those kind of fundamentals are things that have caused this team some problems. If they can get a handle on that moving forward, you like their chances. You know, they are who they are. They're not there yet, but I agree with you. A lot of nice pieces, and just a great story and a great start for Kyle Lewis, picking up on what he did last September. He's just been terrific. So I think, again, you know, we talked about it at the start of the year, not paying much attention to the record, not worrying about that, just worrying about seeing if you've got some pieces to be good in the near future. And certainly I think they're showing that. And you know, the one big thing they did in the offseason was to sign Evan White to a contract, who had not played a major league game. And you're already seeing the fact that this is a major league caliber player, to be sure, and in particular on defense. He is a terrific defensive first baseman, and so I'm encouraged. I'm enjoying watching him play, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, no, it's been good, and certainly Evan White has looked good. But again, the bullpen still is going to be a big issue.
Oh yeah, I mean they're piecemeal there, and their starting rotation is had its moments, but it's also, you know, not nearly as the finished product. There's a couple pieces in there that they look to move forward with, but most are not, and they kind of knew that was going to be the case, and it's turning out to be kind of a bullpen sort of run for teams. You know, starters aren't going as long yet, and I don't know if that'll change. So having that those issues in the bullpen is obviously going to cost them in the wins and losses department. But a young team, a fun team to watch. You know, it's you know, you just at this point, really, John, it's about staying healthy. It's about getting those guys at bats and seeing what they look like. Eventually, it'll be about bringing up some of the other young guys from AAA, from the minor league camp that's going on, whatever they're calling that. But you know, for such a short season where you don't really get a chance to develop your players. You just hope guys don't have setbacks. And so far, so good.
No, I agree with that. It is so far so good, and you know now it's a matter of trying to do it. Now, what the big story came out on Friday and Saturday that you have a whole bunch of players from the Pac-12 trying to negotiate at the threat of opting out of the season, trying to say, okay, we need to do this. And so asking for 50% of the revenue from football, asking for insurance both now and 6 years down the line. They do have some, you know, requests that they have as far as trying to take care of the their safety with the pandemic. But to me, right, there's a lot of things wrong with what they're asking.
Well, you know, they're not going to happen, and that's a given. But, you know, some of the things, I think eligibility, immediate eligibility for transfers, that was going to happen anyway. What did I see John Wilmer write? The Pac-12 Black College Athletic Summit, that's something that they'll do without a question. I agree with the waivers thing that eliminate, you know, having schools do that is just shameful. So I don't think they'll have an issue with that. 50%, you're of course right. That's not going to play out. And we'll see, you know, I mean, you've already had a couple of key players that are not going to opt out, but it's definitely a show of strength, and it's something that the conference is going to have to deal with, and they will. But no, certain things are certainly not going to play out, and we've seen college things come and go and fizzle in the past, but this is kind of sounding the warning bell, and it's happened with some other conferences too, where you know players in particular are concerned about the fact that if schools aren't opening up and they're not having other sports being played, why are they playing football? Why should they be the ones taking the risk? And I think that's a very good question that they're asking. So, you know, they won't get all their demands for sure, but some of them are going to be easy to get.
Yeah.
So some of them, there's room for the Pac-12 to look like they're compromising without really getting involved in the 50% thing or that particular issue.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's just kind of strange to see. And again, I don't know how the number of players seems to be very small. I guess a lot of players are saying that they support it, but also not necessarily being in that front line.
Right. And that's the problem with college is you're only there for a couple of years and very few guys. And I can understand that would be willing to risk a year of eligibility. So, you know, that having been said, it's noise and it's good noise, but we'll see exactly what it winds up meaning. I still have, as we've talked about, John, I have serious doubts that there's going to be college football in the fall anyway. And nothing has happened in the last couple of days to change that feeling. The Big Ten, I think, is going to be one of the first, the power conferences to make a call on that. And I think it might be this week. And I think a lot of other schools will probably take their lead from what they do.
No doubt. But, because right now, I mean, it seems like the Power Five are trying to power through it.
Well, they certainly want to in the South and whatnot. But, you know, the Big Ten is a different story. I mean, they've got issues spiking all over the place there. And in a lot of places that their commissioner has thrown, you know, has said that he's not sure that they're not sure that that would change things for the other conferences if the Big Ten, makes a call to not play. So I think all eyes will be on them this week, and their decision will go a long way towards determining whether or not college football's played this fall.
Mm-hmm, no doubt. But, right now, I mean, because I think what is it? Because I know that the two that are being the most aggressive, and maybe it's wrong, but it's like, okay, you know, the ACC wants to try to start by the 13th of September to make sure that the NFL doesn't grab the TV revenue with no college football and on a Saturday game. And, you know, you got ACC, Pac-12, and we'll see about the Big 12, but, you know, all around the 26th of September.
Well, in the SEC, of course, they want to play, and yeah, they're planning on it too. So, you know, it'll be conference only if that winds up happening. That's already the plan in the Pac-12 and in the Big Ten. So, yeah, we go over it every day, and it's just the sign of the times. It's very difficult to make plans in the future when you got such a crazy situation happening day to day.
Oh, no doubt. And it is a bizarre situation right now to see, you know, where it's all going to go. But of course, the big thing is going right now is Dave Grosby on our Daily Dose of the Groz on birthday number 60. Happy birthday.
John, thank you very much, and look forward to talking to you tomorrow.
Okay, that sounds good. And of course, we'll be back tomorrow at 10, John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.